speaking with Dwayne Higgins this morning from CDH. The D is you.
The C is you. Me also.
Oh, I see. You have a silent C in your name.
I do.
All right. Very cool. Very cool.
And there's a select few people that actually do know that.
Well, I don't have that interest. So okay. Don't worry. Are you ready for a why do we say that?
Why did you say that?
Why do we say thunderstruck? That someone is thunderstruck.
Huh.
Any idea?
I assume because of the sound, the noise that would shock you.
Pretty close. I mean, for a rookie, pretty close.
Oh.
As late as the 17th century, few common folk knew that thunder is the noise that follows a lightning flash. Many people thought caught outdoors, in a violent storm, feared thunderbolts almost as much as lightning. Fear and trembling were so common during storms that these atmospheric disturbances were linked with any state of acute terror. A 17th century poet described a love-shaken youth as being so thunderstrucken that he was void of all sense. Since the time of Ben Franklin, we've known that thunder is never dangerous, but early notions about it are firmly embedded in our language. And as a result, a person who seems speechless from surprise or fear is likely to be described as being thunderstruck.
Huh. And I do find that somewhat humorous that they relate that to love.
Yeah. Yeah. In so many levels.
Yeah. No, I know.
All right, smart guy. What is the biggest thing that people don't know about paint?
Awesome. I just happen to have notes.
Oh, good.
Having to do with
Lord,
that.
Lord, that would be... I'm glad you didn't tell me about that.
I know.
Because we would have talked about fashion statements then.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
No, actually, the microclimates in our area are quite unique and have caused so many issues and problems over the many years that we have people that have grown up in the valley and move here to go and paint. We have people that have grown up here and have seen climates changing. That is not the climate change concept, but we have microclimates. So we have a coastal climate, we have a ridge climate, and then we have an inland climate. And all of those are affecting paint, even more so now than ever, because paints are trying to catch up, but they can't fix it.
That's what I was saying. The composition of the paint itself,
yes,
is changed or is different or should be different based on where the location is?
Well, I would say the composition has changed drastically. Raw materials are just not as findable as they used to be. And then on top of that, there's a lot of people yelling for greener, and that is complicating the R&D in companies, and they're looking for better and better. And the problem is they're not getting better and better. They're getting just alternatives. And so the better, maybe as you and I grew up here, were the 80, 90 years ago with first generation paint jobs, because that lead-based paint or the oil-based products were a more sustainable, stronger source.
Is lead and oil the same?
No.
It's tough to find. I mean, the lead paint, yeah, okay, we can all understand that one.
Yeah.
But oil-based paint is kind of tough to come by now, too.
It is, because of all the refinery and what it takes to take petroleums down to a different source. And then also you're looking again at cultural concepts of what oil and water-based materials are designed for, and you have too many people that are saying they don't want to have anything to do with oil-based.
But the oil-based is a stronger product, isn't it?
They're a stronger product in some senses. Once, I don't know when it was, probably back in the late 70s is when acrylics started to be introduced into the field. And once acrylics were introduced in the field, now you can have a water-based acrylic as opposed to an oil-based enamel. And it would function the same way. And so,
it withstands the weather and sun the same?
Even more so, the latex acrylics started withstanding the fading, all of those setbacks that are in painting better than oil-based. Oil-based breaks down differently and powders up and allows, it's still durable, but once it starts cracking, you're done. And the water base, you can peel it much easier if that starts failing. So the water-based acrylics are stronger than the oil-based enamels.
What about colors, Dwayne? Certainly a lot of us, if we do have done any historical, know what Victorians used to look like.
Yes.
I don't see too many of those around, and I'm sure that you guys are tickled pink that you don't.
You were right.
I mean, they're signature pieces, obviously.
Yeah.
But are there certain colors that last better? Or because of the chemicals, everything's the same?
Well, there's a couple of – that's kind of a twofold answer. The primary colors are still the most fadable, which are red, blue, and yellow. Those are the most fadable colors. The secondary colors are a better fit for almost any area. So if you're using what is typically a red base or a yellow base or a blue base, those have a propensity of failing faster, fading faster, wearing out faster. Those mixed with other tints, and that's where the companies have worked really hard to try to keep utilizing those, because those are the most easily accessible. So if you have a yellow house, it might look like a yellow notepad, that kind of color. If you alter,
not the super vibrant.
Yes, the super vibrant. If you alter that just slightly and use a deep gold tint instead of a yellow tint, you can get a longer lasting product. And so to use the generic term yellow isn't as correct anymore, because back when I started, I had 7 colors to work with. My color chart, I had 7 colors. You want yellow, lady, or do you want green, or do you want blue? Those were the colors. Then I could take those colors and mix them together and make my own colors out of that, which I did when I started.
And now the explosion is such.
Now there's it's more of a challenge, because not only does every paint company have one palette, they'll have 2 or 3 palettes based on whatever specialty they've decided to go into that week. And so
not coastal or the next climate or the inland, but something different.
No, correct. Yeah, something different altogether.
Based on their product access?
Actually, based on consumer information, where somebody says, I want a little duller of this. I want a little brighter of that. Oh, okay. So then they go back to the drawing board, which is one of our problems in the paint industry. If a house that I painted 2 years ago runs into an immediate change, now their paint's obsolete.
You're starting all over again. Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time. It's
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Dwayne Eggins from CDH Painting. Dwayne, the colors that you were referencing in the first segment, that there were 7 base colors, if you will, and then you kind of played around here and played around there back in the old days when you actually did that instead of a computer doing it. There was an option, maybe 20 years ago, historical colors.
Yes.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. So now we've got something totally different as well. Do the colors mix and match and play well together?
No. Very funny about that, in my mind, because anything that was last week is historical. The way life progresses, you can have something that was front and center this year that in another 2 years, it'll be obsolete. Now, in another 20 years, that'll be historical. And so we're dealing with historical colors every day. What developed was somebody looked back and said, somewhere around 1910, let's call that historical. And these are the colors. Because
post-Victorian era.
Correct. Because prior to that, you were using, let's say, roots to make colors. Well, you're only going to have certain types of colors when you're using those types of products. Some minerals were being used to make colors. So those types of colors, although they're considered historical, they were the only things that were there, but they were nowhere near the historical colors that are being presented now because they're too bright.
And that's why I was wondering the intenseness of the color. Right. I mean, if you see, well, some of those Victorians that are on, oh boy, just went blank. Hoyers are on, 13, down the Huntoon area?
Is that? Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. There are some that have really been candied out, I guess.
Yeah, they've flowered them up.
Yeah.
Without question.
Now, are those anything close to the historical colors? Because
no.
When I think of Sam Swanland and some of his old pictures, they were muted in comparison.
Our colors back at the turn of the century were limited and very dull. The whole bright concept was not available, could not have been made. And so when people say, I want to go historical, and then they show me a palette, and I do everything I can, honestly, to not laugh. Because it's like, well, that's not historical. Historical is white, and it was a dull white. If you ever pictured...
Like the Victorians on 3rd Street?
Yeah. Exactly.
Those
whole sister quad quintet group.
Yeah, the lawyer
buildings
houses.
Right there. Uh-huh.
That's
historical.
Okay.
Some of our early pictures that you can, of course, you have to find the right ones that you can have were colorized of any sort to be able to do this. But at the same time, you can see in the historical record of the paint itself. So if you dig deep into the paint, you start finding these colors and you're going, this was the color of this house? This is like a dull, dull, dull blue. Yeah, because the azure that would have come from whatever they were bringing it from, that's all they had. And so we've got this glorified or romanticized idea of what colors were. The majority of houses that were built in those late 1800s in particular, were no paint. They spent years with no paint. And then someone came up with the idea, let's start coloring these things up. And so they were using whatever they could. Otherwise, you'd have Tom Sawyer's whitewash. And that was the whole concept, of you just put white on.
The gingerbreadness of the houses really never popped.
Turn of the century. That's when they started developing. That's when Carson started working on it. And if you look at his original colors, you can see it's a very dull, muted greens. They found some type of earth tone that they could manufacture enough of and made it. And
probably ferns or redwood branches. Right?
I think they
had a little skunk cabbage thrown in for...
Yeah, well, the skunk cabbage is very common for... I mean, you look at some of these and go, well, it's not azalea, that's for sure. They're too bright. But yeah, I think we've gotten off the color track when it comes to calling something historical when it never really was.
But it to me, and I've always had a pipe dream of, well, okay, I've stopped dreaming about it, having a Victorian. But part of it is to paint out the architectural features. And if there's a sunburst, mm-hmm. okay. Let's make it a sunburst.
Sure.
Not monochromatic, boring, blah. How challenging is it for your troops to deal with somebody like that wants to have all these things really brought out and highlighted and accentuated?
Well, there's a couple of versions of that. The main one is if anybody's got deep enough pockets, you can get what you want. Everything is doable. The problem is not everything is as practical as that, because those sunbursts, if they're doing, again, going back to our primary color concept, if you were to say, I want those to be a sharp, bright yellow, hardly any paint company in the world allows you to paint something sharp and bright exterior anymore, because they can't cover it with a warranty because of its fadeability. So you have to dull that down. We've done that with the sense of trying to explain to people on those sunbursts exactly. Well, the sun's not really bright yellow like that. It's not the sharp yellow.
Let's use a little orange in
there.
It's
that little orangey. Yeah. Now that gives you a chance of having at least a couple of colors to work with rather than this big bright light that's up in the sky.
Yeah, look at sunset.
Look at sunset.
And we'll find some colors there.
Exactly.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Dwayne Hagans, from CDH Painting. Dwayne, there is this other element in the paint that I don't think, particularly for exterior, that people don't really grasp, the finish.
Hmm.
Yeah, if you flat all the way out to the super high gloss.
Correct.
I had a first house, and it was a yellowy-ish, and I went with high gloss.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing to me was just the coolest. I really felt bad when subsequent owners painted it out.
Yeah.
Because it took on almost like a luminescence.
Mm.
It was really, Benjamin Moore, high gloss, and it was the right color for that house.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of like there's an essence there. Do we consider the finish with the paints that we choose, or do they just I'll go semi-gloss because we can wash that down.
Make it easier, right? I do think that some people take that in consideration. That's part of our responsibility as an industry leader, a painter, as opposed to, or a painting contractor, let's say, as opposed to somebody that's just going to come and paint your house. Those are some of the things that you can see a difference of, taking some time and discussing what that could look like. Where it changes, and what you probably discovered, if you had, let's say, a broke down T111 plywood type of siding, and you put a bright, glossy surface on there, and all you were doing was illuminating the ugly, you might consider that differently. But if you have a nice...
It would look like it had a disease.
Exactly.
Speckled.
You're going, oh my goodness, I had no idea what this thing really looked like.
Well, that's not quite the language I think I would have running in my head, but yeah, okay, we got there.
But when you gave yourself this sharp, well-attented look, it gave you a feeling of satisfaction and pride that you did something for your neighborhood that way, as opposed
to... Yeah, you nailed
to,
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're just like, whoa, I really did something here. And others would drive by and say, wow. Maybe they wouldn't say wow in the same sentence as you would. Maybe their wow was, what kind of knucklehead wanted to do that?
Yeah.
But for the most part, people really do see those sheens. The problem is, companies have made some poor choices in, let's just say, I can start with flat. Then there's matte. Then there's eggshell. Then there's satin. Then there's pearl. Then there's semi-gloss. And there's a couple of that are in between, depending on what company you're looking at. That has caused a lot of confusion in people.
Because the nuances are lost on us?
Correct. If I gave you the actual details, it would bore the audience of how they determine what each of those are. It's not difficult, but it's just it's like, why are you doing so many things? Yeah, this it's like having the fan book that you've seen now where you're carrying it in a wheelbarrow because there's so many different colors. And if you've got two or three different companies, you're looking at all those colors. Okay, the Sheens have started doing the same thing because somebody has an idea. I do have a little bit of a thought process with that. I think R&D needs more work to do. I think they've ran themselves out of. So what we're doing now is instead of the 100 meter being ran at 9.10, 9.9, it's being ran at 9.8732, and the decimal point keeps going out. I think they're doing the same thing with Sheens and colors.
No, I don't know the difference between 9 days and 9.5 days running 100, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Now, different materials, though, take that paint differently also, I would think. If you're painting masonry, okay, versus redwood versus that ugly, nasty OSB stuff. It's going to end up looking differently. Or do we have the presumption that if you throw enough coats on it, eventually it's all going to look the same?
Well, there is a factor to that. We were painting many, many years ago, we were painting the Swayze Theater. And so on the backside, the person who was in charge of the whole concept wanted us to mimic a building that was across the alleyway. The alleyway was a solid, hard brick, very smooth finish. And so that the person who had painted that put on a coat of primer, a couple coats of paint. It was rock solid. Swayze was rough texture stucco. And I said, I don't think you can get the same thing by that. We worked hard trying to get as much material on there as we could and never worked. It never really, and I didn't understand that they were planning on doing this huge mural, and you know, beautiful as it was, but he wanted to have like a blank slate, solid, hard.
A canvas.
And it wasn't going to work quite that way. And so you're correct. If you have like this beautiful cedar or nice redwood as a completely finished out piece of wood, as opposed to a concrete block, you're going to have your Sheens are going to look completely different in those, in that setting, and in the same way as you have some of our older redwood has been, it's kind of fluted, so it's got scratches through it, and you're trying to get a solid finish.
Fill it in.
Might as well not. Just go ahead and go with flat because you're never going to get a uniform finish on it. And people will try, and then they'll be frustrated because they've spent a lot of extra money to do something that's probably not going to look the way they think it's going to look.
Well, I would think you're going back, you know, the old zip programs when the guys would come in and they do the woodpecker holes.
Yes.
Yeah. Can those things ever be truly hidden or they just are there and that's part of the character of the wall?
Well, we have done, and I've actually seen lots of painters work really hard. The problem is if you can find those spots where they stop, they actually do stop moving, then it can work. But when the plugs go in or whatever else happens to it, it's not stopping. It's still changing. So then the cracks continue, and that's when you're saying, well, this is pointless. I can't ever stop that from happening.
So there are certain things that paint can't cover up.
No. And or caulk.
Yeah, a little Bondo on the wall.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, what about stucco? Is that a whole different creature entirely? It's almost a specialty?
Oh, it is a specialty. And for our area, it's quite a bit of something that's, if it fits and works, great for you. Because it is not great for our area. We have too much moisture by far. The curing of that, along with the ability for that to crack, it's way better in a dry climate, in a no humid climate.
Yeah, stable.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But then again, if you look at the materials as a bigger group, there's no material that is perfect for our climate.
Yeah, plastic. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft Salad Dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Dwayne Higgins from CDH Painting. Dwayne, the different types of materials that are there, the different desires that people have, what is realistic for us to do, either to hire for you guys or to do it themselves? You know, I think there's a fair amount of us, and I'm certainly in that group, that I find it therapeutic to paint.
Sure.
Because it's a tangible, and I can... You know, I can take a little art brush if I want to, you know, or get the big rollers. What are some of those common mistakes that we have in our head that we ought to try to purge?
Well, I think you're correct. The do-it-yourselfer has a lot of avenues that they could go down. I think where I've seen the biggest confusion and thereby the mistakes are using the wrong tools. So then the do-it-yourselfer is wearing themselves out trying to do something.
The artist brush.
The artist brush, yeah. As you may have just mentioned. Trying to do something in real time that they're seeing, oh, that doesn't look that difficult. So a painting contractor come in and doing the work, and they say, that doesn't look that difficult. So I'm going to get my one-inch brush and my very thin roller, and I'm going to paint that popcorn ceiling. And 4 days later, they're still working on the popcorn ceiling that only took the painter an hour and a half to do. And they're saying, I can do the same thing. And so I think so much of that is in real understanding of the tools and equipment that they have available.
It's amazing how the tools really do influence.
Completely.
And you don't appreciate it.
I think it's called a hammer for a reason, as opposed to, I'm going to take this pliers and start banging on something.
Right.
And we see that all the time. And I was just watching somebody, and it's occupational hazard, works with territory. I'm watching somebody bending over with a tray, rolling out, climbing up a 6-foot ladder, painting a ceiling, walking down the ladder, bending over, rolling, climbing back up the ladder, painting the...
A ladder to paint the ceiling? What's that all about?
I know. And I'm thinking, have you never seen even the joke about the guys who were putting things together to paint whatever they were doing? Or I'm thinking they have these things called extension poles, and you can roll that and reach up and roll it and roll the ceiling out, and then just take the extension pole and drop it right down into the paint. And I'm just going, oh my goodness, I helped him.
But yeah, whoops. Couple quick rapid fires because we're getting paint tape. What's the best way to put that on so that it, one, doesn't pull paint off, and two, so that the seal is proper so that you're not slopping all over and having to recut it in 4 or 5 times?
Well, now they have multiple colors, and using those colors much easier for us to grasp. So a blue tape has a specific design. An orange tape has a specific design. And all you have to do is read the information. This one is designed for if you're doing something with a chemical, a harsher chemical, so like an epoxy. This one's designed if you're using latex paint. So you're putting those on top of whatever is existing. And then trying not to tape too fast, because that's where the problems come in. They're saying, oh, I can just, because I saw the half-hour show on HGTV, and they just taped right over the top. It was like, no, it didn't quite work the way they were doing that.
rooster tails when you're using the roller. How do you avoid the spray?
That really anymore is the paint. There are paints. I don't understand it. Honestly, as long as I've been doing this, we had paints before that you could roll over the top of anything, and You remember the advertisement with the woman with the chiffon dress? And she was doing, that was real because those paints didn't splatter. Now we have paints that are splattering, and you have to try to avoid, and that's the harder part. Because there's no company that is saying, oh, yeah, our paint splatter.
well, we've run out of time, but not out of questions. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming by.
Hi, you're welcome. Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.